flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. He joins us at noon on every Thursday, and we appreciate same. Rafi, welcome to the show.
Hey, my pleasure, Newell. How are you today?
Rafi, another busy week, a lot going on, but let's jump into our first topic of homicide victim characteristics and arrests. This is something that is always talked about, covered by the media extensively. And you have, a finalization of numbers in 2024. Tell us about them.
Right. So, you know, last time I was on, we talked about how all the categories of violent crime have been reduced this year versus last year. I'm sorry, 2024 versus 2023. We're in 2025 now. But I thought that because homicide is really the statistic that people take a look at it, we decided to do a little bit deeper dive on it, and we're breaking it down by homicide victims citywide and homicide arrests citywide. And by looking at these numbers, I think we get a better appreciation why crime is down, not just with respect to homicides, but all the major categories of crime. And it really ties into solve rates. So, you know, when it comes to homicides, you know, every unsolved homicide that hasn't resulted in an arrest means that the perpetrator is still out there. That means that if that perpetrator hasn't been brought to justice, hasn't been arrested, then there is the potential for that perpetrator to commit additional crimes or to be retaliated against. And either of those scenarios drives up our crime rate. So by taking a look at the homicide victims and the homicide cleared by arrest numbers, I think we get, you know, a better appreciation, not just why homicide is down, but why all the major categories of crime are down. So first thing we did was we broke down victims in 2024, and 80% of the homicide victims died by shootings versus 90% in 2023. The youngest victim that we had last year was 3 years old. That was a negligent homicide. That was an instance in which a child got a hold of someone's gun and accidentally discharged it, killing the child, and the responsible adult was arrested for that. And the oldest victim was 71 years old. But the average age of a homicide victim was 33 years old. And we also looked at the average age of the homicide arrested subjects, and there's a correlation there. So the age of the victim is, you know, indicative roughly of the age of the offender. So the average age of offenders is about 30 years old. The average age of victims of homicides were 33 years old, or at least the greatest percentage of them.
Right.
So, you know, there's some ties there. It kind of shows that, you know, people are associating with people of their own age, and they're taking advantage of opportunities. So I thought that was an interesting point there in that. And we saw that the homicide victims that were juveniles, that meaning under the age of 18, counted for about 11% of all the homicides, which was down from 35 the year before. And those 35 juveniles in 2023 that were homicide victims accounted for 16% of all the homicides versus the 14 that were victimized in 2024 that accounted for 11%. So we saw a reduction and juvenile violence, which is another positive trend there with that. So when you take a look at the victims, you have to take a look at the other side and take a look at who the perpetrators were. And the perpetrators of homicides, there were 111 people in 2024 that were arrested and booked on homicide charges. Not all of those 111 people were charged with homicides that occurred in 2024. Some were from previous years, and I'll get into that a little bit more. But there were 86 arrests for homicides that occurred in 2024. So the 111 people arrested for homicides, 86 were arrested for homicides that occurred in 2024. So the 86 suspects accounted for that were arrested accounted for a 77% solved by arrest rate for 2024 homicides. That's a pretty impressive number, you know, in the city of New Orleans, at least historic.
The highest that I can remember ever.
Right. So if those homicide suspects have been arrested, that means that they're not out on the streets to commit other crimes of violence. And we know that many of the violent offenders are generalists. They're looking for opportunities. And sometime it may be an armed robbery. Another time it could be a home invasion. Another time it could be a carjacking. And any of those incidents could escalate in, you know, where a firearm is used into a fatality or a non-fatal shooting. So by arresting those homicide predators, we're seeing that they're not on the streets, and that explains, A, the reduction in homicides, and B, I think the bigger picture of the further decline in all categories of violent crime, because many of those homicide perpetrators are involved in other criminal activity, including felony crimes of violence. So by breaking down the numbers the way that we have, we're starting to get a better appreciation of why, you know, we've experienced the types of crime reductions that we've gained in this city over the past 2 years. And, you know, what we saw with respect to homicides 23 versus 24, there was a 34% reduction. And if we compare 2024's numbers with 2022's homicide rate, we experienced a 49% decline. So violent crime and all categories of crime have been coming down in this city over the past 2 years. And I believe that, you know, the solve rates on these violent crimes are contributing to the overall decline in crime that the city has realized over the past 2 years. One of the reasons that I attribute to the high solve rate is, A, the use of technology, And B, particularly when it comes to the French Quarter and 8th District, there's a lot of video cameras that are there. And those cameras are critical and instrumental to law enforcement in identifying who the perpetrators are in these violent crimes. And, you know, we just went through a terrorist attack in the 8th District on January the 1st. And there were 14 fatalities from that terrorist attack. And lost in the mix, there was, before that terrorist attack, there was a homicide committed a little earlier in the morning on New Year's Day. So there was one homicide. So we took a look at the numbers for the 8th District between January the 1st and January the 7th. The 30th. There were, in 2025, we've had 15, but 14 of them came in the terrorist attack. There was only one homicide by shooting, and that's the exact same number that we saw in 2024. But in 2024, there were two non-fatal shootings, one carjacking, and 9 armed robberies. During the same period in 2025, there have been 0 non-fatal shootings, 0 carjackings, and 0 armed robberies. So what I attribute that decline to is obviously the heightened security after the terrorist attack and also the snow event that occurred the week of the 21st, where foot traffic and businesses were shut the French Quarter wasn't its normal self during almost a 5-day period of time. But what you're seeing is that, the French Quarter can and usually is a safe place. And, in the next segment, we're going to be talking about, some of the things that have that are going to change with respect to security, not just because of the Super Bowl, but because of the CR1 designation for Mardi Gras in and around not just the Superdome, but in the Central Business District, the Warehouse District, and the French Quarter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very encouraged by, obviously, the clearance rate. We always felt in Jefferson Parish that was kind of the cornerstone to our success in many respects. And we had developed a policy about, allowing a certain amount of overtime in the immediate aftermath of murders in order to canvass neighborhoods and do what we need to do to collect as much evidence and street-level intelligence as possible. We, for many years, had enjoyed over 90% solution rate of homicides in the current year. There have been some anomaly years where it dropped into the 80s. But one of the things that too, is that, as you pointed out about age and age groups, is that that points to that a lot of these murders, and that was our experience in Jefferson Parish, are relational. The victim and the perpetrator know one another, right?
Yes.
And that assists, that helps as well. But that's the same experience that most people have across the country. Even in major urban areas, that most murders are relational. You don't find a healthy percentage of random murders in any particular place. And that's why it's key. And I agree with you. The more these impact players that you can put in jail and selectively incapacitate in a short period of time, the better off you're going to be throughout all crime categories. But this is a huge turnaround, right? I mean,
yep.
I know that NOPD had some years where the clearance rate was in the 30s. Some of the, lowest in the country. The average in, 2022 was about 50%, somewhere right around 48, 49% in this country. So they're well above the national average, which is great, right?
Right. And last year also, there were 23 homicide arrests that were for murders that were committed between 2023 and 2004.
Yep.
So, They're working cold cases. They're solving cases that occurred late in 2023 that resulted in the arrest of the perpetrators in early 2024. So, you know, that shows the police department, even with their decreased manpower, even despite the consent decree that some people argue inhibits the police department's ability to be an effective crime-fighting force in this city, the statistics show that the consent decree has not been an impediment, and you could actually make the argument that it's probably forced the police department to be more effective and efficient because of the consent decree over the last 12 years, and particularly the last 2 years. There's a quantum shift in the way the police department went about approaching this city as the numbers of officers continued to decline. So even with, you know, the 300 fewer officers in 2025 than we had in 2019, we're still seeing, you know, declines in crime, and that's because the police department is working smarter, not necessarily trying to solve everything with numbers, but by using technology cooperating in partnerships with other agencies, and that's leading to the, I think, the high solve rates and the continued decline in crime.
You know, deployment of technology is a tricky thing. It's a slippery slope, and if you don't do it right from the very beginning, you could be working for the technology instead of the technology working for you. And I think a lot of people have realized that and had the ugly experience of having to work for the technology because it just wasn't deployed and implemented in an appropriate fashion. And you have to spend a lot of time thinking about how you're going to deploy technology within an organization in order to ensure that it makes operational sense. And you're not just deploying it for the sake of deploying it and for the sake of a press conference and not letting it do and reach its capability and capacity sooner rather than later. And the more
right.
you succeed in that silo, the better off you're going to be.
So, I mean, I know JPSO, you know, was a big champion, got on the bandwagon early with respect to license plate scanners, and that was
LPRs were huge. Huge.
Yep. Yep. So New Orleans was behind, you know, JP, and that now they're, you know, they're in the game, and they're also benefiting, I think, from a robust private camera network. The Project NOLA cameras that have been deployed, you know, around town with particular emphasis in and around the French Quarter. And as the individuals, they get arrested for perpetrating crimes, you know, many of the people that are arrested for crimes in the French Quarter don't reside in the French Quarter. So if they're arrested in the French Quarter, you know, particularly with a firearm, that means that they're not going back to where they live, because they're going to remain in pretrial custody. And we're seeing the inmate population continue to increase. So if those offenders that are arrested in the French Quarter, A, are having their weapons taken away from them, and B, are not going back to their neighborhoods, it means that crime is being reduced not just in the French Quarter or the 8th District, but every district in the city of New Orleans. And those perpetrators don't go back to the 7th District or the 5th District or wherever they came from. It means that those districts are also safer because those violent offenders are no longer out on the streets to take advantage of law-abiding citizens in the manner that they had previously done.
No doubt. When we come back after the break, we will talk about French Quarter security for the Super Bowl. Rafi attended a series of meetings on SAME, and he'll report back to us exactly what the plan holds. And this is good information to have, because if you intend to go down to the French Quarter and enjoy the festivities, which I plan on doing, it's good to have this information. So we'll talk about that when we return. Stay with us.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Obviously, the Super Bowl has SEER 1 designation, that Special Event Assessment Rating. And with that comes a lot of thickness, some federal influence, federal assets. Things are happening quickly as we approach Super Bowl 59. And there's a special security plan for the French Quarter. I think, Rafi, you attended a meeting the other day where they talked about what was going to be done. Tell us about it.
Right. So essentially, there were actually two plans that were announced yesterday. And the hay is in the barn for the perimeter around the Super Bowl. That's a plan that's been in works for, you know, years and been refined, and they have that, you know, nailed down. But after what happened on January the 1st, particularly with respect to the French Quarter, and with the also the fact that much of the Super Bowl is also going to be staged, you know, from the convention center and some of the experiences there into the French Quarter, I think that the governor had a press conference yesterday, and the city of New Orleans had a meeting yesterday with their security plans. And the governor basically extended the emergency decree that he initiated on January the 1st. And it was announced that the state, under their authority, was banning the use of ice chests and backpacks into the French Quarter. And they also announced that they were discouraging the use of purses over 4 by 6 inches, rolling suitcases, shopping bags, fanny packs, and camera cases. And they said, the governor announced that pursuant to his authority to issue this executive order, anyone that wanted to bring a backpack or purse or anything into the French Quarter had to submit to a search. And if they refused to submit to a search, they could decline to have their property searched, but they wouldn't be allowed into this enhanced security zone, which is basically the first 8 blocks of Bourbon Street between Canal and St. Anne. So that plan was announced. And what they're searching for in the bags that are being brought into the French Quarter, whether it's luggage or women's purses or knapsacks or shopping bags or fanny packs, they're looking for explosive devices. So the city held their press conference, and they announced all of the barricades and barriers that were being installed around the French Quarter and how they were going to be deployed. And those barriers and barricades are all intended to reduce the potential and hopefully eliminate a vehicle threat, resulting in something that we just experienced on January the 1st on Bourbon Street. So you've got searches being conducted to eliminate explosives. You have your barricades to eliminate the use of a vehicle to inflict injuries and fatalities on the public. But, you know, one of the things that is not being addressed is the potential of firearms threats. So in Louisiana, constitutional carry became law, and it was in July, and it took effect in New Orleans on August the 1st. And now anybody can carry a firearm without a permit, without a background check, without any training. Anyone over the age of 18 can carry a firearm. And previously, to carry a concealed weapon, you had to have a permit, which meant that you went through the background checks. You had to prove that you had training in that. And, you know, none of those requirements exist anymore. So anybody can carry a firearm into the French Quarter. And so those searches are not to eliminate or identify people carrying firearms, because they can constitutionally carry a firearm into the French Quarter. So I think there is some discussions now about, there is now, I think, a further awakening, you know, maybe on the legislative side and around the state, as to why organizations like the Metropolitan Crime Commission and other groups during the last legislative session were advocating for some restrictions on the use of firearms and possession of firearms in and around the French Quarter. So I believe that firearm threats greatly exceed the threat of terrorist events. And there's nothing that we can do right now that can restrict anyone that wants to carry a gun on the Bourbon Street. And we know that the terrorist that drove his vehicle down Bourbon Street, when he crashed his vehicle, he got out and he opened fire on the crowd and the officers that were attempting to neutralize him. And he had a handgun and a long rifle, as well as explosives in his vehicle. So what the state is doing right now and what the city's doing is trying to eliminate and reduce the potential for vehicle threats and explosive threats. But we can't do anything about firearm threats, because the law permits anyone to carry a firearm without any training, without background checks. I think that that's something that is, we're going to have to take a long look at in the next legislative session, to see if there should not be some exceptions for the French Quarter in certain parts of the state in which that are similar to what we may see. In the French Quarter, we know that there are only 3,000 residents, but there's 16 million visitors that come to this city. And the vast numbers of those 16 million annual visitors are going to go to the French Quarter and the CBD and the convention center areas and the hotels that line Canal Street. And we know that so those areas are not just the 3,000 residents. It's not just about the pedestrians that are on foot walking up and down the street. When you try and impose more security, it comes at the cost of convenience. So the meeting yesterday evening that the city conducted was to allow businesses to express their concerns about some of the restrictions on with the use of barricades restricting traffic flow in and around Bourbon Street. And some of the businesses pointed out that, those barricades were going to adversely affect their businesses. So, you know, this isn't Times Square where, you know, it's just a public meeting place. This, you know, the French Quarter, the Warehouse District, the convention center areas, they're lined with hotels, they're lined with residents and apartments. People live there. So you've got businesses that need to have deliveries supplied. And the Bratton Group consultants were talking about, listen, we can, you know, make recommendations, and the safest choice would be to make it a pedestrian walkway. But, you know, there's a balance because this isn't just a pedestrian walkway. It's a neighborhood. It's people's businesses, and they have to have access to their property to be able to make a living and enjoy the property that they've purchased and are living in. So, you know,
there's not an accommodation from, you know, a time period for these businesses to accept deliveries like at between 5 and 8 in the morning?
That's variable. And what the consultant said, listen, the longer that window is, the more potential for vehicles getting in there. And if they see a group of people that they could potentially decide to target, a group of pedestrians that are there. So they said the longer that the street is open to traffic, the greater the risk potential in that. Some of the businesses were pointed out they're going to put barricades on the side streets. And that means that, you know, businesses that are located on the side streets are going to be affected by the barrier placements because their guests and clients and patrons can't get down the side streets. There was a parking lot owner there saying, I pay $50,000 a month to rent the lot. And if I don't have access, if motorists don't have access to my lot, I'm out of business. And I'm on the hook for $50,000 a month lease that I have for this property down there. No one's going to be able to park there. So those are the types of competing interests that are being weighed. Some of the restaurateurs were arguing that, you know, it's virtually impossible to make all deliveries be in a 2 to 4 hour window. They were, you know, suggesting that the window be, you know, open to 6 hours or so. And, you know, the consultants commented that, you know, the longer it's open, the greater the risk. And all of this, you're never going to be able to eliminate all the risk involved in it. What you're hoping to do is minimize it and find the sweet spot where people are willing to be inconvenienced, you know, to the extent that's necessary to reach everybody's safety expectation thresholds. But it's never going to make it totally terrorist-proof. And I think that, you know, this is going to be a work in progress. What we're seeing now are security measures that were never contemplated before January the 1st. And because of what happened on January the 1st, everything is now being reexamined. Things are going to change. I think what happened on January 1st in this city is going to be, as significant as the 9/11 terrorist attacks were, years ago on air travel. So it's going to mean that, you know, people are going to be inconvenienced in the name of additional security enhancements, but no matter how many enhancements they make, they're never going to be totally able to eliminate some of the security, threats that may be posed to a soft target like, you know, Bourbon Street.
Yeah, it really, as I understand, it's difficult with this balance of interest. At some point, you adopt the measures. You designate at what events those measures are going to be implemented, and business owners can then take the necessary actions to make sure that in the build-out of their restaurants or whatever, that they're able to provide more refrigerator space, freezer space, and otherwise to be able to accommodate that if they know in advance, right? And whether or not that's renting a piece of equipment or purchasing a piece of equipment. And obviously the first 5 or 6 times that you have to do this are going to be very difficult for folks in order to work out all of the nuances of the security plan. It sounds like most people recognize and realize that, and it's just getting that balance. Now, when you're dealing with a Super Bowl, it's just something of a whole different nature, right? Because everybody wants to lure a Super Bowl back, right? And you want everybody to leave with having a good time and a good taste and, you know, and everything else. And it's all about, you know, continuing to market the city. And I get it. It's going to be interesting to see what we end up doing for Mardi Gras.
So one of the things that I neglected to mention is that law enforcement presence in this city for the Super Bowl is going to be unprecedented. The governor committed 350 National Guardsmen to assist with security. So they'll be conducting the checkpoints going in and out of the French Quarter to check the bags and whatnot. Additionally, state troopers will be working double shifts to allow for every troop to send down additional troopers to the city of New Orleans for Super Bowl security.
Let us get to our break so we leave ourselves some time, Rafi, if you don't mind, on the back half of this. So we're visiting with Rafi Goyeneche. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafi, just a couple of questions. If you're carrying a bag or whatever and you're going through the security checkpoint and it reveals a gun,
they can't restrict the use. That's constitutional carry. So, again, the consultants that were present at the meeting yesterday, their response to, you know, do guns pose a threat to public safety? Their response was that that's a political decision that was made when the legislature changed that. So their emphasis is on eliminating the threats posed by vehicles and the threats posed by explosive devices being brought into the French Quarter.
How does this work
with respect to firearms?
I'm just kind of curious. I'm not trying to create an issue here, but in Super Bowl past, when you approach the Superdome, your first checkpoint to that area was like literally a block away, right?
Right.
I know you're prohibited from carrying a firearm into the Superdome.
Right.
But it seems as though the security perimeter of the dome is taken in a lot of territory geography that you would otherwise have the right to carry a weapon.
So I think any of the ticketed areas are subject to the restrictions for the entity that is hosting that event. If that's their event, they can restrict the use of firearms. But when you're talking about walking down a public street in the French Quarter, you know, that is not a ticketed event. And, you know, the question was posed to law enforcement there. You open a bag and you see a gun and, you know, a bunch of ammunition. What is your response to that? Saying we can't really do anything. You know, we wave them through and thank them.
Well, let's get real quick to the last topic. GOSEP, the after action report. This was a really quick turnaround, obviously, because of the Super Bowl. What did it reveal?
So this is, you know, the first of what's going to be a series of after-action reports. So this is the first one that became public. And it really was a very positive report in many aspects. It talked about many of the successes that, you know, some of the strengths involved the emergency response and rapid deployment of officers and effective communication between federal, state, and local agency and strong coordination between EMS teams. But they also pointed out some areas for improvement, and that's to be expected. So, you know, you not only want to, when something like this happens, you want to take a deep, long look at it, and this was the state's first report on this. But they talked about there were still some gaps in communication that delayed the activation of notifications to some of the response teams that were needed there. There was some delays in street closures that also hindered the setup of protective barriers to secure the crime scene. And so there was some inconsistent use of emergency management systems for tracking resources and information. All of those things can be corrected, and I suspect will be corrected and operational in time for the Super Bowl in this. And hopefully going forward, we'll be better prepared to deal with this. But there's going to be several other of these reports coming out. This is just the first one. The city's doing one. The attorney general's doing one. City's consultants, the Bratton Group, is doing one. So, there'll be, and the FBI has an after-action report that I think they'll be releasing at some point in time as well.
Well, we run out of time. We always appreciate your time, your insight. Thank you so much for joining us today. Have a great weekend.
You too. Take care.
Scoot's up next. We'll be right back. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed today's show. Next week, we will be broadcasting from the New Orleans Convention Center in advance of the Super Bowl. And Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, we're going to talk about the continuing preparation for the Super Bowl. And we'll talk about Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. And, of course, we have to talk about aspects of that tragic crash last night. You know, I was watching the coverage, tuned in just shortly after it happened, and, you know, what a horrible thing, and it seems like that could have been avoided. So we'll talk about that as well.
Scoot's up next. Stay tuned, folks. We'll see you guys again in the morning. Have a great Thursday evening.